Good afternoon and welcome to MoneyWeb at midday with myself, Nastasia Aaron. So it's just gone 12 o'clock on the dot. Coming up on the show, we're going to be looking back at the week that was. It's been a very busy week, both on the company front and on the political side as well. One of the things we're going to be touching on is Resilient Group. They don't seem to be getting a break at all from the market, and it comes across as though the market is a little unconvinced with regards to their expectations, rather explanations. And then we'll also probably touch on Citigroup as well. They reported their numbers yesterday, and it was interesting to see that their occupancies in SA fell to about 64%, and they attributed this to the depressed business environment and low consumer confidence levels. So we'll talk about all of that and then also throw into a busy results week next week as well. All of this with Chantal Marx from F&B Securities. Let's take a quick break, and then she joins us in studio.
MoneyWeb has a unique opportunity for financial advisors through our Click & Advisor offering. Advisors can interact with a growing investor-based audience and attract new clients. Get everything you need to know by joining our free webinar on February the 27th at 11 a.m. Go to www.moneyweb.co.za to secure your spot.
And joining me in studio is Chantal Marx from F&B Securities. Chantal, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you too. Happy Valentine's Day and all the exciting things that happened on February 14th. Looking back at the week that was, what do you make of it? It's very interesting.
Yeah, it was actually busy on the results and trading update front. I mean, yesterday, of course, was a huge day for the market, up in excess of 3%, with most of the SA Inc. stocks also rallying. Today, a little bit of weakness, probably some profit-taking in financials and those SA Inc. names on the industrial side. And then we also had Fun and Games, the new Viceroy report on Capitec, but market doesn't seem too fazed by that. And of course, the Resilient Group coming under continued pressure.
Take me through the Resilient Group, because I mean, I read the 361 report. In fact, I had to read it twice because the first time I read it, I was a little confused. It's not a very easy report to digest. You have to sort of, well, me in my case, I had to read it twice because I was like, I'm a little confused as to what is happening. What exactly is the Resilient Group being accused of from your perspective?
Yeah, so I mean, some of the things that they mention is kind of widely known in the market. We know that most of the group companies trade at a premium to NAV. IFRS dictates that they need to be carried at fair value on the balance sheet, which means that Resilient Group almost trades at a premium to NAV, and the same thing for Fortress, and that's because of that complicated holding structure that they have. So that really wasn't too much of news to us. Then the other accusation is that their operating income isn't enough to cover their dividend, but we know that they do get dividends from the investment companies that they own, and then also they get interest from the BEE Trust, which was another issue highlighted by the 361 report and also by Arkham Capital. And the accusation there is that the BEE Trust should be consolidated in the financial statements because effectively Resilient has control over the trust because of the board members that are the board members on there are all Resilient Group company, either ex-executives or even ex-PAs. So the argument is it should be consolidated. But the auditors were quite comfortable that it shouldn't, and we're not too concerned about that either. What is a concern is the allegations of market manipulation, and that does not seem to be going away at all. Then yesterday we also had an interview with Des van Rooyen, the CEO of the Resilient Group, being published in the business report, and him not coming across particularly well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It comes across as though we've entered a new era where all attention is on corporate South Africa. It's on JSE listed companies, whether it's from the short sellers or it's from some report that emerges that alleges certain things may be happening on the JSE. It's a very interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to governance, right? And you can argue that it's exactly the same when it comes to the state and government at the moment. Everyone wants to get rid of the dodginess, okay? Whether it's on the JSE or whether or not it is in cabinet. And maybe we just needed short sellers to highlight how hypocritical we've been, because you say, oh, well, we need to get rid of corruption in government. Meanwhile, there are accusations now flying about of insider trading, market manipulation, accounting fraud on, in the case of Steinhoff. And it's probably important for us to flesh this out as market commentators, as analysts, and as the investment community as a whole.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, Chantal's going to go through some of the highlighting events that took place this week. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday, and I'm still joined in studio by Chantal Marks from F&B Securities. So we started off the week with the resignation by Carlo Gonzaga from Taste Holdings.
Yes.
And then from there, it just wouldn't stop. There was the Resilient Group, which is, as you mentioned, it's still unconvincing. And then CAP Industrial released results, and then Exxaro and their special dividend of about $4.5 billion. And then there was Kumba, there was Harmony, the City Lodge, there were trading updates. There's a lot that happened. So which one of those did you find interesting?
So the big market movers were the Discovery trading statement, the Aspen trading state, or Adcock Ingram, Aspen trading statement, and Adcock Ingram for that matter, but the Aspen one was a big market mover. And then you also mentioned City Lodge, which I found very, very interesting. So in terms of Aspen and Discovery, both saying that headline earnings per share are going to be way ahead of what the market was expecting, so big positive moves there. We will be interested to see kind of where why those moves occur and where they actually come from. But of course, these guys don't give a lot of detail when it comes to a trading statement. City Lodge releasing a very disappointing set of results. And it just shows you how geared these hotel groups are to the SA economy and to occupancy rates in particular. And I think if you look at the financial statements in a bit of detail, you've got revenue that only fell marginally, but suddenly you've got a 10 or 11% drop in EBITDA, and that filters through to a big drop in headline earnings per share. And the reason is that these hotels need to, as soon as their occupancy is lower, their unit cost or their cost per room goes up because they've got a big fixed cost base. So for them, a weak economy, weakness in business travel, translating from weak consumer and business confidence, really hurt them. And I don't think that they're going to be able to recover in the second half sufficiently for guys to say, okay, well, we're happy with full year expectations for earnings. So we expect earnings downgrades on the back of that of that result.
Is that the case with other operators in their environment, in the environment that City Lodge operates in? Or is this just an issue that has just only affected City Lodge?
So it would have affected everyone to a certain extent, but City Lodge is a little bit more exposed to South Africa because it is more exposed to business travel as opposed to travel. So if you look at the Togo Sun hotels, for example, occupancies fell a little bit, but not by nearly as much because they cater to international tourists, and we've still been seeing really good international tourism numbers. So kind of a little bit protected from that perspective. One thing that we also must not forget about is the fact that Airbnb and the sharing economy generally poses a huge threat to these companies. And it's not only in international travel or local travel, it's business travel as well, because Airbnb just makes it so easy now.
That's very interesting. The one thing that I found I expected it to happen was the resignation of Carlo Gonzaga. And the only reason I expected it to happen was when the results of the results came out where they were raising money to create more expansion. Ruskovitz Value Fund, if I'm not mistaken, said, well, they are expecting changes to happen within the company. And the first change they made was that they changed certain board members. And everyone was talking about what's going to happen to Carlos. Because generally the case is sometimes when a rights issue is underwritten by somebody who really has a stake in your company, if you haven't been performing well or the company hasn't been performing well, and in this case, Ruskovitz and Conduit, if I'm not mistaken, they have a very increased now shareholding of Taste. So their opinion sort of matters. And I expected Carlos to leave. I just didn't know when it was going to happen. So when I clicked on Sends, and I saw his resignation with immediate effect that now an asset manager was going to be taking over. I was like, oh, well, I expected that. What do you make of, one, Carlos leaving, and two, whether Ruskovitz is going to be able to
take Taste Holdings forward, because I believe that Taste Holdings underestimated the capital expansion that came with Starbucks and the Domino's.
Yeah, and they overestimated the strength of the South African consumer. So, I mean, the Taste as a little bit of a crisis of strategy, and there are several reasons why they had to keep on changing their strategy. So initially, a few years ago, when they bought the Fish and Chips Co., they positioned themselves as a fast food kind of focused company, focusing on lower to mid LSMs. Yeah. And when the economy started performing poorly, they were very, very hard hit. And I mean, you can look at most of the brands that play in low and middle LSMs when it comes to fast food. Just look at, I think it's Captain Durego's in the Spur Group. Sales came under a significant amount of pressure, and the jewelry business, as well as the Scooters and St. Elmo's pizza franchises, really weren't enough to offset that. So they made another plan, and they got these master franchise agreements, first for Domino's and then for Starbucks. And Domino's was kind of an easy sell, because you just rebrand all your Scooters and St. Elmo's outlets. Mm. And it seemed to be going well for a while. But then Starbucks came, and these are new shops that you have to open. It's a massive initial capital outlay, and in a market that is actually quite challenged at the moment. So while the higher end, which is where these premium international brands play, was quite resilient for a while, by the time they got into the higher end, you also saw some pressure coming through there. So then they tried to sell the jewelry business in order to finance the expansion, but there were no buyers in the market for jewelry brands, because in the environment in which they found themselves, who are they going to sell it to? Who's going to buy this thing? And that's when they had to start raising capital. Raising a lot of capital and not showing any returns to your shareholders generally makes them a little bit unhappy. And Risco, as being the largest shareholder by far, started calling the shots. Yeah. And as you mentioned, you weren't surprised. I wasn't surprised. I thought it would have happened actually a little bit sooner.
All right. So, and then on Wednesday, they had the US CPI numbers that came a little bit higher than expected. And the whole, I think the theme between last week and this week has volatility returned to the market? Is this the new normal?
So I think that little flash crash was kind of expected. Like, it wasn't little, it was quite a substantial flash crash, but it was needed to just to create opportunity in the market again, to cool the market down a little bit. But volatility seems to have kind of stabilized a little bit now. But of course, it's going to be very dependent on what the Fed does. And what the Fed does is very dependent on that inflation print. Mm. You also have a fiscal situation developing in the US, because they're cutting taxes, but they want to increase infrastructure expenditure. That's going to place pressure on bond yields. It will place pressure on the dollar to the downside, which in turn will be inflationary. So a lot of these factors might lead to a very compromised situation in the US. And I think the market is just kind of just took a breath and said, well, what does this all mean? And then earnings prints still came out pretty positive, and guys started bargain hunting, and the market kind of just stabilized from there.
All right. Throwing into next week, what are some of the results you're looking out for?
Oh, wow. It is super busy. So in the US, earnings season kind of winding down now, but we're going to have a close look at Walmart and Home Depot to get an idea of what kind of shape the US consumer is in. Then in South Africa, obviously, we've got the budget, which will be front and center, because what's said in the budget might be bond friendly, which might be Moody's friendly, but it could have implications for growth and therefore for equity markets. And then on results specifically, the big miners, Glencore, Billiton, African Rainbow Minerals, Anglo American, also some of the retailers. We've got Truist, Massmart, and Woolies reporting results next week, amongst others. Bitcorp, JSE, there's just a massive amount of information that's going to come our way next week, but we're looking forward to it.
All right, Chantel, thanks so much for your time. That's Chantel Marks from F&B Securities. You can tune in later today on the SAFM market update, where Pranesh Naidu is standing in for me on the show. Thank you. Goodbye.